Hey, coming up on Tech News Today, NVIDIA gets into hardware, Lenovo launches a new tabletop PC, and Roku breaks down the cable TV wall. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, January 7th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT1. And they recently launched a developer platform for complete code control. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker looking for video, photos, illustrations, music, sound effects, After Effects templates, or 3D models, check out Pond5. And for an exclusive 50 free stock media files, go to pond5.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the tech news in the world, putting context for you, starting with the top, I think, 12 stories of the day because of CES today in the news fuse. NVIDIA owes some folks socks after knocking them off at their press event at CES last night. The video card maker announced the GeForce Grid, a cloud gaming service that will stream PC games to smart TVs, tablets, and smartphones. The company also unveiled the new Tegra 4 chip, which is a quad-core 4 plus 1, kind of like the Tegra 3, but should have six times the performance, according to NVIDIA. And the sock knocker was Project Shield, a portable game console in the shape of a controller with a flip-out touchscreen. The device runs Android, and can stream PC games.
Google's Eric Schmidt has arrived in North Korea, accompanying Bill Richardson, former New Mexico governor and former ambassador to the UN, on what's being described as a private humanitarian mission. The U.S. State Department has expressed extreme disapproval of the trip, with a spokesperson saying, "We don't think the timing of this is particularly helpful," given a recent missile launch. Richardson told CBS this morning that Schmidt is going as a private citizen. This is not a Google trip.
Lenovo never lets us down at CES. The company introduced the Idea Center Horizon, which it calls the world's first table PC. The Horizon is an all-in-one PC with a 27-inch touchscreen that can be laid flat on your table. The Idea Center Horizon runs Windows 8, but will also have a second UI to make it easier for multiple users to play games on it. Lenovo says it'll be released around the early summer for around $1,700.
Roku announced hundreds of new channel partners for its internet streaming video box, but the one getting all the attention is Time Warner Cable. Existing subscribers to Time Warner will be able to get up to 300 live channels streaming to a free Roku app starting sometime before April. You do have to be a Time Warner Cable subscriber to take advantage of the app, though.
Apple's App Store has reached 40 billion downloads. Some other impressive numbers Apple released. There are more than 500 million active accounts on the App Store. December saw more than 2 billion apps downloaded. There are now more than 775,000 applications for the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch. And developers have been paid more than $7 billion to date. Eddie Q, Apple's senior vice president of internet software and services, said that Apple will continue to invest in providing devs with the best ecosystem so they can create the most innovative apps in the world.
The French government has told Free, a French ISP, that the ISP cannot block online ads. Now, Free gave its users software to block pop-ups and other ads. French online publishing and advertising groups complained to the French government that it was losing revenue. France's minister for the digital economy said that an internet service provider cannot unilaterally implement such blocking.
Lego unveiled the third generation of its Mindstorm programmable robots, EV3. It features more sensors and motors and more ways to program, including mobile apps. The new product, with its 594 pieces that can make five different robots, should begin selling this summer at a retail cost of $350.
You thought CES was all about TVs, didn't you? Ha! No! Fitbit announced a new fitness tracker called the Fitbit Flex, which is a wristband-style tracker. YThings also introduced a new gadget called the Smart Activity Tracker, which is a lot like a Fitbit One, actually, if you're familiar with how that works. The Flex ships in the spring for about $100. There's no pricing or availability info on the YThings product just yet.
Toshiba had a boatload of announcements for CES. First up, Toshiba's entering the U.S. 4K TV market. The televisions will be available in three sizes, 58, 65, and 84 inches. No pricing was mentioned, however. Toshiba is also introducing Cloud TV, which is effectively its name for its smart TV functions. There's also Toshiba's new Blu-ray players with Cloud TV built in. They're calling these media boxes, media boxes.
Hey, good name for those. LG announced a slate of huge new TVs in its press conference this morning, along with the promise that all their LCD TVs will use LEDs from now on. The biggest deal, though previously announced, was the 100-inch Hecto laser projector coming to Korea later this month and the U.S. in March. That's the new part. No price on it, though. Also, a 55-inch OLED TV will begin shipping this March. We've got a price for that one, $12,000. To start with, it's more if you want to get the 65-inch OLED. And almost mundane next to these giants, LG announced 55 and 65-inch 4K TVs to go along with the 84-inch version they already sell. Oh, and the Magic Remote that has motion control now lets you write numbers of channels in the air. Like, anybody remembers numbers of channels anymore?
What's new in the world of Vizio, you ask? Ah, well, I have some answers. Vizio announced it will join the 4K party this year. The company will offer three Ultra HD TVs at sizes of 55, 65, and 70 inches. Pricing and availability weren't discussed, but Vizio says it'll bring the expensive new technology to mainstream consumers. Hopefully that means prices will go down. Vizio also announced some new 3D HD TVs, but I don't know. That seems like two CESs ago.
Sharp held its CES keynote, and here are some of the things it announced. Sharp showed off its 4K televisions and says its ICC Purios is the first UHD TV to receive THX certification. It'll ship in the summer of this year. A 60-inch Aquos Ultra HD TV will launch in the second half of the year. Also, Sharp is introducing a second screen remote control for iOS and Android.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace.com. We talk about them all the time. Great supporter of Tech News Today. And if you want a fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, online portfolio, you want to go give it a shot. It doesn't cost anything to try it out. You can try it out for free. Try out those new templates they developed with the mobile responsive design. They give you everything you need to create the website. So you just put the content in. You're a photographer, you just upload your pictures. You pick the layout. You pick the template. Maybe customize the colors. Customize the position of things. It's a nice drag and drop interface. And then when someone goes to your site, there are seven different versions of every image created. So the correct size loads for the device. You don't get some huge picture trying to load on some small 5-inch telephone screen. Your site looks professionally designed no matter how it's viewed. They've got mobile responsive designs. The template resizes along with the pictures. And it's 100% drag and drop functionality for all the customization tools. Really no reason not to go just check it out, see if you like it, because if you do, you don't have to give it, I mean, you don't have to give a credit card to try it, but if you do decide to purchase it, you get this offer code, TNT1, and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. It includes monthly and annual plans. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT1 to get everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Now, those watching the video podcast have probably noticed that I look like I'm a hostage surrounded by a bunch of boxes in a warehouse. That's because I've moved, but I'm not in my new setup down in Los Angeles yet. So.
Apparently, Home Depot is sponsoring this episode of...
Or Rider, or Ace.
or Record Express. Express.
I wish that said Planet Express, frankly. I'll sharpie that out. But with still the same great content, got lots of bandwidth. We'll work on the video quality and all that. January 21st is the day that we plan on unveiling the whole new shebang. So look for that. But let's talk about CES. There's CES stuff going on. Ayaz is going to head over there tomorrow. The people have been crawling the floors. Lots of press going on over there. And NVIDIA had that big announcement yesterday. We mentioned it in the news fuse. Grid is cloud computing. Now, NVIDIA won't be selling this direct to consumers. They'll be selling it to MSOs and partners. But it is cloud gaming, a la OnLive. PC games streamed to your TV, your tablet, or your smartphone. There's 20 grid servers powered by 240 GPUs capable of 200 teraflops. So they got a lot of power behind that. Also, the new Tegra 4, much more powerful version of the Tegra 3. Not a big revolutionary change there, although they do have the Icera i500 programmable LTE modem processor. Not integrated, separate, but that allows them to try to make some more headway into phones. But the the follow-on to last year's NVIDIA announcement. Last year, NVIDIA said, hey, guess what? We're going to do Windows on ARM processors. This year, it's Project Shield, mobile game console. Where the NVIDIA is going to make hardware, Ayaz. What do you make of this thing?
Well, I was looking at it. I mean, it seems like a really interesting idea with this flip-up screen. And the fact that it could work with Grid looks pretty amazing, because the fact is, if you have all the power of a desktop PC and you can actually just send that video over to a handheld, it makes it a killer device, because you have this built-in ecosystem right off the bat.
Yeah, I think this is very interesting. I think it's less of an obvious, impressive success as NVIDIA, you know, talking about making ARM processors. And combined with the Windows announcement last year, that meant NVIDIA might be making computers. We didn't really see that. Here we see them actually making something, but I'm not sure who this is for. I mean, it's going to be able to play Android games, so that's kind of interesting. It doesn't immediately have an LTE modem built into it. They're talking about having it out Q2 2013, no price. Sarah, if this isn't for hardcore gamers, which it may or may not be, because it can stream some PC games from your computer, is this for casual gamers?
Well, I mean, it can stream PC games from your computer as long as you're on the same Wi-Fi network, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, that already is a little bit limiting. I mean, the whole point of portable gaming systems is that they're portable. So I'm just going to go ahead and judge it by its cover. I think this thing is really... really weird looking. It's like a controller, and it's got a screen attached, so you're sort of holding it in this kind of funny way, sort of forced to look down or have your arms up in the air. It kind of looks like one of those boom boxes that, you know, you see at Best Buy, where you're like, I mean, I get that they're all the bells and whistles and they're trying to make it colorful and stand out, but it's really ugly. And I'm not exactly sure who this is for.
Look, I absolutely love chocolate, and I'm a big fan of hot sauce. I don't necessarily want them together, and this strikes me a little bit like that. Maybe not quite as drastic, but Android games on a device that also can stream full-screen PC games to this little screen? Am I crazy, Ayaz?
You know, I think you got to have a hook, right? So we've got all these different kinds of little systems. We have the Ouya. We have phones trying to be everything with these touch screens. We have gaming tablets with giant docking stations. Maybe it's kind of like the Samsung approach of, like, try to throw everything you got out there. Here's a weird form factor. We have a really good controller. This is our hook. Mm-hmm. And actually, a gamer's controller, if you're used to consoles, instead of having this touchscreen, no haptic feedback style of controls, I think that it's definitely a strange one. But since NVIDIA's behind it, and the fact that it has, again, like I was saying, the built-in ecosystem of Steam games, theoretically, and Android games, I think it's got a chance, especially because NVIDIA's got that. They got amazing processors.
Yeah, and some of the games on Android specifically, some of the games that shine, Dead Space, comes to mind immediately, are really kind of powerful and almost compete against some of the console quality games, possibly because of that processor. I think the battle that they have here with this kind of device is that it will always, unless it proves itself over time, kind of be in that shadow of, well, why would you buy a dedicated controller for casual gaming? You know, serious hardcore gamers probably aren't going to take this as seriously as NVIDIA hopes that they would. And that's kind of what something like this kind of hinges on, I think.
I'm kind of assuming that this has got too many. Well, sure, you can use it on your big screen. All you have to do is plug in HDMI. Or there is that wireless option, sort of Wi-Fi sort of thing, if your TV supports it. But then again, I do love Mexican hot chocolate. So maybe the hot sauce and the chocolate can work together.
Hey, we were saying in News Fuse, there's a lot of 4K TVs coming out at CES. This puts out video, 4K video as well. So, hey, immediately you have more content potentially for your 4K TV.
You can actually get TVs that'll take advantage of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about some more CES announcements. Lenovo had a bunch yesterday, as they usually do on that CES unveiled first day of the show, Ayaz.
Yeah, Lenovo's got a bunch of new toys. I talked about the Idea Center Horizon. This is the one that's getting the most press out there. A 27-inch touchscreen all-in-one. They're calling it a table PC. Now, there's another PC from Sony that exists that does a similar thing, that you can just lay it flat, but I believe that's 20 inches. This is definitely the biggest one. Lenovo bundles the table PC with joysticks and an e-dice. So if you want to play games on this, once you tilt the Horizon Dawn. It goes into a custom UI called Aura and allows you to play multiplayer games. And it's built so a lot of people can gather around and play games. It's got two joysticks, e-dice, so if you're playing Monopoly, because it'll be preloaded with Monopoly on it, you'll be able to roll the dice, and the machine will pick up what the roll was. It runs Windows 8, so if you want to use it as a PC, you can do that too. You get access to a bunch of apps from Lenovo's App Shop. They're going to launch with over 3,000 apps for the table PC, and it has a battery. So if you wanted to, if you want to move it around, you can
take it on the train with you.
It's got 2 hours of battery life. And obviously, you can plug it in, but 2 hours of battery life.
Two hours.
What's 27 inches?
All right, all right.
So I mean, it's a really interesting concept.
I guess that's for taking it down to the rec room and playing with the e-dice.
Well, maybe if you're getting too rowdy in the living room, you can just take it away, like you're saying, Tom. Like, get that out of this living room because you're causing a ruckus.
So Microsoft Surface is going away from the huge tabletop thing, and Lenovo's going towards it.
Pretty much. And Lenovo also showed off, Tom, I don't know if you saw this, but they also showed off some accessories for it, including a stand to hold it up, or this amazing-looking table that's just glass, and then it parts in the middle. The table PC then comes up, and it looks like something out of the future. Tom, did you get to see that?
No, I didn't see the table, the parts of like the Red Sea in the middle and rises up. That is kind of a new trend I've noticed. I've been watching a lot of home and garden television. Don't ask me why. But there's a lot of, well, the TV just comes up out of the coffee table. Oh, the table, you can have the computer just rise. That seems to be a thing that everybody wants now.
Sarah, what do you think of this gadget? I mean, like, we've seen, you know, really thin televisions, thin PCs. This is a tabletop PC, like Jason's mentioning. It's kind of the Surface again. Do people want a coffee table computer? Or
I don't know anybody who does. I see a couple people in the chat room saying this is one of those products that just will never come out. This is like the perfect CES product where people go, huh, head scratcher. That's kind of interesting. That's kind of different. Lenovo gets some press. They stand out as doing something innovative and different from the pack. I don't see this being a huge consumer want.
I just don't see why somebody would take their all-in-one PC and they're like, you know what I want to do? I want to tip it over. Lenovo seems to mess with that a lot, huh? They're like, here's the yoga. Let's take the hinge. Turn it all the way back. That's
very bendy folks over there at Lenovo.
The future is flexible, apparently. Just keep pushing it down.
Well, I agree that the future is flexible.
They had this all-in-one thing last year, remember? But all it did was go down. Now they've at least added some features to it.
Tom, do you think that App Store is going to help them? 3,000 apps. They've got EA. They said that the applications are going to be specifically written for the table PC, or they're going to be customized for that. Will that help something like this take off, or is this one of those this is never coming out kind of products?
You almost have to have an App Store these days anyway, and you almost have to have an App Store with something like this where no one's out there making programs designed for collapsible all-in-one desktops that turn into tabletops. So you got to have some places where people can pick up the things that'll work with the e-dice and all of the other accessories that they're going to try to market to you. But I don't know that makes it successful. That just makes it not fail.
Well, Lenovo also has a bunch of other like more traditional products. They've got the Helix, which is a dockable Windows tablet. The docking station allows you to take the tablet out, turn it around, so you can dock forwards and backwards. It's got a redesigned trackpad. That's more for like traditional PCs if you're into that, launching in quarter one with a $1,500 starting price. Then if you like the yoga, there's actually one coming out in June, $800, 11-inch screen, runs Windows 8, not RT, because there is a smaller yoga out there that runs RT. This, I think, is probably going to be the most mainstream out of all the products we're looking here, but I'm just really excited that Lenovo keeps trying to do some of the strangest designs I've ever seen when it comes to computers.
Yeah, it's always fun to see what they come up with. It does seem like these are designs that we've seen previously at CES, but now they're either revving them in the case of the yoga, or they're coming up with shipping products that actually do a lot more, like the Horizon, which, what, $1,700 for an all-in-one desktop that does some crazy stuff? Not that bad. Maybe it will catch on. There's some non-CES news to discuss. Poor Hulu is losing their visionary, Sarah.
Yeah, Jason Kilar announced on Friday afternoon, actually, via a blog post, an official company blog post, that he, as CEO and CTO, Rich Tom, both who have been with Hulu since the very beginning in 2007, Rich rather Tom, started in a role lesser than CTO, but became CTO in more recent years, and that they are going to move on and will be departing the company sometime in Q1. So it's sort of effective immediately, but obviously to allow for some transition. And it's kind of interesting because on one hand, we've heard rumors of Kilar possibly leaving for months. He was even thrown in the ring as a possible person to take over Yahoo before Marissa Mayer ended up taking that CEO role. But Hulu had a really good year. So this is not sort of like, ooh, Kilar's departing because Hulu's really in financial trouble. $695 million in revenues in 2012, which was a 65% increase compared to 2011. Hulu Plus, which is obviously the subscription service, grew from 1 million to 1.5 million subscribers between September 2011 and January 2012, got to about 3 million back in this last December. So this is kind of Jason Kilar leaving at what you consider sort of a peak of Hulu. Then again, we, you know, anybody who follows Hulu knows that it's a very sort of precarious relationship. You've got the joint venture of News Corp, Disney, NBC Universal, but NBC Universal really has no say in the direction of the company since the acquisition by Comcast. Back last fall, Providence, back in October, Providence Equity Partners closed a deal to sell off its stake in Hulu. And at that point, is kind of interesting because Hulu had started as, I mean, it really had was running as a startup. So back in 2007, very unproven model, a lot of employees had equity. That was the way it went. When Providence Equity Partners was allowed to sell off its stake, other employees within Hulu were allowed to sell theirs as well. They've now transitioned over to more of a traditional media model. So there are a lot of employees that have either left, they've cashed out and left, or will probably be expected to leave because the whole incentive is no longer on the table. And I wonder if this is just Kilar and co. saying, this is as good as it's going to get. This has been a really fun ride. Hulu's future is very uncertain because of News Corp and Disney making all of the decisions. And it's been a fun run. We got to go. Ayaz, what do you think?
You know, I think you might be right about the fact that Hulu has had such a weird relationship with its owners, effectively. They've been kind of combative when it comes to content. You don't know what's going to show up on Hulu. The bifurcation of Hulu Plus and Hulu is kind of strange as well. And Jason Kilar's made it a really impressive, he's done a very impressive job considering how difficult it's been to get content on there with this unproven model when there was all these other outlets for competition. The thing is, when Hulu first came out, it was built as what, a YouTube competitor, a legitimate YouTube competitor at the time, and it does a really good job. And so I think he's basically like, he's trying to leave while everything is hot. He was a hot commodity as a CEO, and as you mentioned before, Yahoo was looking at him. I'm sure there's a whole bunch of companies that are coming after him because he made that company Hulu very, very successful. So I think it's just get out while you can.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's just that. I think that's a big part of it, obviously. But he would have gotten out earlier if it was just that. I think Kilar has been waiting for something to entice him out because he's been struggling with his masters at Hulu for a long time. And there's been rumors that he was going to leave over and over and over again. So I'm curious what made him pull the trigger right now. Because like you said, Sarah, Hulu's actually been doing better than ever. So I was starting to think, well, maybe he's not going to leave. Maybe he's finally figured out how to exist within that universe. So I'd be really surprised if we don't see some kind of shocker announcement soon. Jason Kilar joined Yahoo. Jason Kilar joined Roku or Netflix. Who knows? But I expect him to make a splash within the next month or so.
Well, we will follow that closely.
Yes, we will. All right. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. I know a lot of folks in our audience are content makers. They're podcasters, they're filmmakers, photographers. And a lot of times you need stock media, whether it's, you know, just some stock photos to fill out a shot, or you want some stock video or some sound effects if you're doing some theater stuff, or even some audio plays, anything like that. You want to make sure you're using stuff you have permission to use. And you you don't want to pay through the nose to get permission to use stuff. So Pond5 is the building block and creative source resource for you. 10 million professional quality photos, vector illustrations, music tracks, sound effects, customizable motion graphics, templates, 3D models, and more. The collection's growing all the time because you can actually upload and sell your stuff as well. Use Pond5 to get 50% royalties for each and every sale. Higher payout than other stock photo marketplaces. And as a result, the prices are unbeatable. So is the range and quality of content. If you're a media maker or artist, check out Pond5. Take your creativity to the next level or upload your own content and put it to work at the world's most artist-friendly marketplace for stock media. This month, you can get 50 free stock media files to try it out by going to pond5.com. That's P-O-N-D, the number 5.com /TNT. That's pond5.com/TNT. And we thank Pond5 for their support of Tech News Today. Windows RT has gotten sort of jailbroken, so you can run whatever desktop apps you want. This is something a lot of people wanting to do on their Microsoft Surface RTs, right, IS?
Yeah, well, that headline's a bit misleading. I've seen that. Jailbroken to run desktop apps. Well, that's kind of true. Here's what's happened. A researcher over at SurfSec, who goes by the name of CL Rocker, found a way to run unsigned desktop apps on Windows RT. Now, right now, you can only run Windows Store apps on Windows RT devices. The jailbreak uses an exploit, a setting in RAM to make this work. It's got limited functionality, though, okay? Because x86 applications would have to be recompiled for ARM. So in theory, you can run desktop apps, but there aren't any yet for this. The jailbreak also must be executed.
There's the rub.
There's also the jailbreak must be executed each time the OS is booted up or reset. So it's not a persistent change. You're going to have to keep doing this every single time. Tom, do you think Microsoft should turn a blind eye to this hack, kind of like it did with the Xbox when that was getting hacked? Or should they be trying to patch this immediately?
I would hope that Microsoft treats this the way Apple treats its jailbreaks, which they don't go out of their way to shut it down, but they also don't really pay attention to whether new updates that they make break it. A lot of people think Apple fights jailbreaking. I don't think they do. They just don't quality test for it. So if they do an update that breaks jailbreaking, they don't really care. I'm hoping Microsoft takes that kind of hands-off approach. I don't expect them to come in and support it, or they would have just enabled it to begin with. But let the hackers play around with this. You get side benefits out of it. Although I wouldn't be surprised to see Microsoft reach out and say, hey, we'd like to bring you into the fold. They did that with Windows Phone, if you remember.
Yeah, how about like, hey, hacker, maybe we could figure out a way to jailbreak it without having to execute it each time the OS is booted up.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's pretty cumbersome. Well, I mean, who's going to have fun with that?
It's the first one. I mean, this is going to take a while for it to become, fully developed. I mean, this is the first time RT's been jailbroken. It's only been out for, a couple of months. So I would hope that Microsoft did what it did with Xbox, which it was, again, they weren't trying to break anything. They just allowed that community to develop, and then they figured something out. They go, oh, all those cool things you put in Xbox, we're going to put it in the 360. Although I don't know what kind of things they would be able to gain from hackers messing with Windows RT running desktop apps on it, because that's what Windows 8 does anyway. Sarah, do you think they should be trying to lock this down, or is this, should they be open?
I think that the Windows RT ecosystem, if you want to, well, sort of the way that it's unique, is not a hit with everybody. And I think it's actually kind of exciting to see what people end up making out of an operating system that some people find really limiting. Hey, maybe they, you know, the whole point is not to be running desktop apps on RT, but if people come up with creative ways to do so and you get a lot of enthusiasm in a community, then Microsoft has a lot to learn from that.
Yeah, I would think Microsoft would want to actually close this down, because it's going to mess up all the benefits of ARM in the first place. It's supposed to be, this is where you get your apps, they're from the store. On top of that, you have battery life concerns. If you start running these bigger applications on it, you're going to kill this device. Mm. So I'm not sure Microsoft's going to go, but I'm thinking they're probably going to try to stamp this out.
All right, we got a couple of more CES-related stories to get back into. First of all, a lot of people have been saying that CES is changing, and it obviously is. Microsoft isn't doing the keynote. They don't even have a booth. A lot of traditionally big presences have scaled down their booths or abandoned, but it's becoming more of a Internet of Things, more of an emerging technology conference on top of the trade show and home theater conference that it always has been. And one piece of evidence of that is the announcement of new Lego Mindstorms EV3. This is the third version of Lego Mindstorms. First was in 98. Second was around 2007 with Mindstorms NXT. EV3 gives you each programmable brick with an ARM9 robotic processor, SD slot, 16 megabytes of flash, Linux, Bluetooth 2.1, iOS and Android compatibility, a USB 2 slot that can be used to add Wi-Fi connectivity, 4 input-output ports, matrix display, and loudspeaker. So tons of features in these bricks now. You also get, with the basic set, 3 interactive servo motors, 2 touch sensors, an infrared sensor that can detect distance and objects and movement, an infrared beacon that can allow for control over a distance of 6 feet, and a color sensor. Plus, they're all backwards compatible with NXT robots. So if you've been building an NXT, you can still use those bricks and those designs with the EV3 robots. You can program right on the brick, or through mobile apps or on your PC. You've got different ways to add. Of course, you get different levels of programming depending on which of those interfaces you're using. And LEGO says they should be selling this summer. The basic set with its 594 pieces, I think I have that right, for a retail cost of $350. Now, people who are into Mindstorms are going crazy about this. They love it. It looks great. They've added a lot of great features. They're opening it up even more to share your designs and your robotic designs. They're reaching out to educators. But Sarah, I think this is one of the bigger stories at CES. And does that seem like a new flavor of CES to be hearing more about this sort of thing, about robots?
Well, yeah. I mean, you mentioned educators, and I think that is absolutely key. I mean, every school should try to get as many of these as possible and have kids tinkering around and coming up with, I don't know. I mean, let their imaginations run wild. You got robots here. This is really, really cool. And that's the educational sector is not necessarily something that I think is really a highlight of CES. Sure, the you've got a variety of booths that are dedicated to learning and teaching, and especially, I mean, people of all ages, but certainly children. But that's really not what CES is about. It's about flashy gadget stuff, you know, and money, money, money. So this is very exciting to me. And I certainly hope that when they're reaching out to educational institutions, that the schools understand how important this would be.
Ayaz, do you think this is an indication of the maker community getting its foothold solid at CES?
I think it's potentially the fact that CES effectively is giant TVs and iterations of televisions instead of it being like the showcase of the greatest and the latest and greatest things. Because it seems like the gadgets that people want most these days are smartphones and tablets. And that's all in February with Mobile World Congress. So now it's these other devices like a Mindstorm or like other smaller companies like Pebble. These companies are getting much more press because we've seen the products already. We've seen televisions before. And these changes aren't happening to at the same speed as they used to. And like I said, the idea of the cool devices everyone wants is not till February. Well, what are you going to report on? You're going to talk about robots because this is flat out cool, because you can make what you want out of this eventually. And who knows what this will end up.
Yeah, I heard you guys talking last week when I was out about the you know, what's going to happen to CES, is CES dying and all of that stuff. And my impression is that what's happened is what moved from Comdex to CES is now starting to leave CES as companies realize they can hold their own events if they're big enough, or they can, you know, go to something like a Mobile World Congress and get a little more attention. And so CES has now got a vacuum that's open for this kind of stuff to move in, where it's like, hey, we don't get attention on our own. We need a big platform like this. So I can see CES becoming this platform for emerging technology. And in fact, I think it could be even cooler than just like, oh, here's another big TV. Oh, here's another tablet that does things, you know, just robots, 3D printers, stuff you can't even think about. That's always the stuff that I always get most excited about at CES anyway. But let's finish off with Roku and their partnership with Time Warner Cable that's sort of setting the over-the-top set-top box industry on its ear. Sarah?
Yeah, Roku's reached some milestones. 700 channels now, and a big partnership with Time Warner Cable, which will bring live streaming and a variety of programs that Time Warner offers to Roku. Now, this is something that Time Warner has already offered on the web, on devices, you know, like an iPad app, for example. But Roku is the first set-top box that gets any of this, this programming. Not only Time Warner Cable, but Blockbuster On Demand, Daily Motion, a lot of international shows from Dishworld, Vivo for music videos. So, you know, and many more. That's just a few.
Did you say Blockbuster On Demand?
I did.
Wow. Okay. Just checking.
You can do that on Roku now. New manufacturing partners, too, for the Roku streaming stick. Westinghouse Digital, TCL Corp, Vox Accessories, Harman Kardon, which brings their manufacturing partners up to 14. 14, of course, is all the big guys, but they're obviously working with smaller partners, reaching out a little bit more. Of course, the streaming stick was something that we heard about a year ago. This was Roku's big news at CES last year. It's a processor, memory, software, built-in Wi-Fi, uses mobile high-definition link or MHL technology to work. So they're certainly banking on the streaming stick. But it's kind of funny. I'm tinkering around with my home entertainment system at home right now, and I do have a Roku box. I also have an Apple TV. And Roku used to be indispensable, speaking of Hulu, because I am a Hulu Plus subscriber, and that was how I watched Hulu content on my big TV via the Hulu Plus app on Roku. And then as soon as Hulu Plus came to Apple TV, I'm like, well, it's just so much better looking on the Apple TV, and I do other stuff on Apple TV anyway. That's one less reason for me to use Roku. And it seems like Roku has been in a really great position for a while now, because smart TVs were sort of happening. Some people were enjoying the built-in apps in their smart TVs, but Roku could kind of say, you know, all you need is this like $100 or, you know, $79 little set-top box. Doesn't even look like anything. You won't even notice it. And manufacturers don't really have to worry about making all their own smart TVs. They can just partner. We can create partnerships, and it's easier for everybody. But smart TVs aren't going away. They're certainly on the rise. We're hearing more and more about that, particularly a year later at CES. So I'm wondering if we think that Roku's days are numbered. They don't have a very nice UI. As other set-top box systems are able to replicate what Roku offers, they're not going to really have a lot of exclusivity anymore. I guess they have a leg up with Time Warner for now. But, I mean, Time Warner has no incentive to be exclusive with Roku.
Well, I mean, man, you're raining on my parade, Sarah.
I'm sorry.
I was all excited. I'm like, this is the Trojan horse. This is how we get rid of the tyranny of having to get installers to come and hook up digital cable. You get a Roku box and you install the app, and then eventually maybe we get a la carte because somebody will want to compete, and you can get Comcast, Time Warner, whatever, in whatever city you're in. They won't have these regional monopolies anymore. But you bring up an effective other side of this, which is like, yeah, but the interface isn't so great, and there's smart TVs now that make it easier. I still think the set-top box probably wins out over the smart TV, but there's no reason that Time Warner Cable can't come up with a smart TV app like this, you know? And right. So it may not be as a guaranteed win as I thought, but I still think it's an incredibly exciting step to see a cable company saying, yeah, well, you know, be a subscriber. We'll let you put as many boxes in your house as you want over the internet.
I mean, I've tried out smart TVs for a very long time, and they all kind of stink. Uh-huh. They're just not fast enough. The apps markets that are stuck to that or just dedicated to that one television, it's not very easy to get an application in those app markets. So a Roku box, for the most part, is pretty open as far as I'm aware. Like, you can make your own applications if you wanted, even. So you could have like a back channel for those kinds of things. I don't know if their days are numbered, especially with their move towards that streaming stick, yeah, or these things where they end up licensing their UI, or their, actually not the UI, but their system. Their UI could definitely use an improvement. I will say that. But I've tried out a number of set-top boxes, and the reason why Roku does well is it's really, really simple. I can't think of a more simple interface than that. While ugly, you can upgrade it, I would imagine, in the future. Because Amazon used to have an app on Roku, and it was almost unusable until they upgraded it fairly recently, and it's much more usable. So I think because the device is so cheap and it's upgradable, it's not a horrible investment of like, oh, wow, I put in $2,000 into my Samsung smart TV, and these apps stink, and the processor stinks. I can always swap this out.
Well, yeah, and Roku still enjoys some really cool, for example, HBO Go. You can watch, you know, HBO Go via your Roku box. You can't do that. Well, none of my other solutions will let me do that, unless it would be, you know, on a smaller device, but not through my big living room television. I understand that Roku is a very successful middleman right now. I just wonder how long Roku can be that middleman.
I don't know. I we go back and forth with Brian Bushrod and I on this on frame rate. He thinks that smart TVs are really stupid because why would you buy a TV that has something built in when you don't want to upgrade your TV every year or two the way you upgrade other devices? And so separate set-top boxes are better that way. But I think firmware upgrades can do a lot. I mean, look at game consoles, you know, with their old-fashioned hardware that lasts for 10 years or more. So I'm not sure that you're not right, Sarah, that, you know, eventually the set-top box may go away. We'll want some kind of simple integrated solution. Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Man in China, according to Chinese website Tencent, we're getting this via Boing Boing, reports that a man got so upset with his son not getting a job and playing an MMO, it doesn't say which one in this story, that he hired in-game assassins to find his son's character and kill him every time he played the game. Is this an effective solution to getting your son off the couch and finding a job?
No, it just makes him want to play more so that he somehow can avoid the hitman.
That's an in-game challenge. You're right.
It's just going to make him a really good player.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to become the top assassin now.
Wait a second. Folks always go off about parents not getting involved with their kids and with their gaming and things. This father should be commended to try to get his lazy son off his butt and actually do something interesting, like I don't know, earn money.
No. This is the kind of dad that when you're like racing down the block will never let the son win because the dad's like, I'm better.
You think that's what this is? I think he just wants to motivate him somehow.
This is like not even tough love. This is just mean.
Well, no, what's tougher than killing somebody? There's no tougher love than that, I would imagine.
It's killing it in character.
Yes, the character.
There's no actual harm being done.
Well,
except for the guy's self-esteem.
There might be some psychological harm being done here.
How old is this son anyway? And I think I saw this last week. I thought he was like in his 20s. He's not like a child.
No. He's
23 years old. This guy is...
He says he's looking for the right job, not just any job.
Well, aren't we all?
Sure. and yet, somehow, we still need to eat. I thought that was pretty hilarious. You know what else is hilarious? The number of things on today's calendar.
Holy moly, we've got some announcements. Fujifilm and Netgear, this is all CES announcements, by the way, happening 12 p.m. Yeah. Pacific time. At 1 p.m. Pacific, we got Intel and Huawei. At 2 p.m. Pacific, we got Cisco and Samsung on deck. At 3 p.m. is Dish. 4 p.m. Ford. 5 p.m. Sony. 6:30 p.m. Qualcomm CEO keynote. It's very exciting.
For Microsoft, right?
Correct. Yeah. So that's the big time slot. Ford and Glimpse. We heard rumblings of their partnership earlier today. So I'm sure we'll hear more about what we can expect in Ford cars. But yeah, it's a jam packed day.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a message from David in Germany. He said, "Hey guys. I was listening to Friday's show and had a couple of points I'd like to mention. E-readers, compared to a book, they are expensive, so it takes a lot of time before it's written down. An e-reader is something that most people will be looking at replacing every 4 to 5 years or so. If it doesn't last that long, it isn't cost-effective. It's like old candy bar phones. Most people would replace them when they stopped working, which was generally 4 to 6 years. People on contracts would replace them every couple of years, but there wasn't the clamor to replace them that there is with smartphones. I also think that the tablet market will start to see this as well. Just like the PC market, where a lot of home users are happy to use a PC until it breaks or a new application they need won't install, tablets will be seen in the same way. I have friends and family members who upgraded to 2006 vintage PCs in the last 18 months because their Windows 95 machines stopped working, or they're buying new bargain basement PCs with the exception they will last for at least 10 years. Their attitudes for smartphones and tablets are the same. If they're going to buy one, then it'll be a long-term investment when an iPad costs more than they would give out for a new PC. It has to last longer than the PC."
I think they're right. You know, ebook readers, that you just need to read the words.
Because last week we were talking about how e-readers were not, they seem like as a standalone device, they're going to be dying out soon. Mm-hmm. Is it just because they're built really well?
Well, I think it's just because, like we talked about, there are always ways to make the technology better. But really, yeah, it's like if you can read the words and it's comfortable to hold and your eyes don't hurt, I mean, you could just hang out with that for a long time. I mean, it's sort of like paper innovation. Well, once it works... I don't know. Maybe get some sort of thicker paper or the pages turn a little bit more easily. It is what it is. It's an e-reader, so people might hold on to them a little bit longer. Got another email from Andy, the system engineer from Michigan, who was responding to our report on China's new yellow light law that was last week, where it now becomes illegal in China, particularly in Beijing, where they have a lot of traffic issues, to speed up when you're going through a yellow light. Yellow means stop, just like red does. He says, I'd like to mention a little known and seldom followed piece of Michigan's motor vehicle laws. Michigan law states that on a yellow light, motorists must stop before entering the intersection, with only one exception, if it's unsafe to do so. Having been ticketed for running a yellow light once in my youth, I'm painfully aware of this little detail. Makes me wince a little when I go under a freshly yellowed traffic light thinking it could have stopped for that safely, only to see three cars following in my rearview mirror. Then again, my wife says I drive like I'm 30 years older than I am.
What, did this become traffic news today when I was gone?
Yes, Tom. We had a randomizer, and we talked about China and yellow lights.
You can tell them the truth. We spent 45 minutes on a very special episode. We only talked about traffic.
Right. The tech of traffic.
Instead of bandwidth traffic, it was dedicated to actual traffic. So.
Yeah, I need a better algorithm for yellow lights. I hate the whole yellow light thing. I never know what to do.
I do. If your front wheels are over the line, you're good to go.
Yeah, that's too much thinking.
Well, that's California anyway. That's what I learned. I hope that's right.
Well, that is it for this episode of Tech News Today. As I mentioned at the top of the show, not in my new set yet. So thank you for your patience. Those of you wondering why I'm surrounded by boxes, I will unpack the boxes. They just arrived yesterday, so I haven't had time yet. What did you guys think, Sarah, Ayaz? Did it go well? First time remote?
I think the audio sounded great.
Your audio is good. I really want you to unpack your boxes because they're stressing me out a little bit because I wonder what's in there and do you need stuff.
But there's a bunch of people in the chat room who are like pretty much saying the same thing.
It just looks like you got a lot of work to do, Tom.
Yeah, get on that, will you? Nah, I'm just going to leave them in the box.
Yeah, packed up to the ceiling.
I don't know. Maybe I'll do it from upstairs tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, where there's more light.
Go nuts. Oh, the lighting looked pretty good. We're just happy to have you, and I'm glad all your stuff is at least there. So
yeah,
the worst is over.
I need to buy a chair too. I'll do that before framing.
Are you sitting on a box?
Wow, you've been squatting for 49 minutes.
I'm sitting on a box. That's why I'm hunched over like this. But that is this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening, for submitting stories in our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. That is the place to go to let us know what stuff you'd like to see on the show. You can find us at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Ayaz is off to CES tomorrow. He'll be from there. I'll still be here. And Sarah will be in San Francisco. So we'll see you then.